All right, we're here for Let's Have a Chat, and I have with me Bethany Mann. She is running for Congress. She's in Missouri's 3rd District. She won that primary out there, and now she is the Democrat in the Missouri 3rd running for Congress. So, Bethany, thanks for joining me on the pod for a chat. How you doing?
Great. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Yeah, I'm glad that we were able to connect. I know you were on with Kevin for a flyover view back before the primary, and looking forward to getting a chance to talk with you. Let's start at the beginning. Who are you? Like, who is Bethany Mann in general? I mean, I know that you're very smart. I've read some things about you, and I would guess that you're very smart. So what's going on? Who are you?
Sure. Gosh, that's a...
Not to be too existential, yeah.
Yeah, no, not too existential.
I'm not looking for like the Jean Valjean answer here, just, you know.
What is life? So Bethany Mann, I'm a regular person. I grew up in Forestdale, Missouri, oldest of 6 kids. I was homeschooled through a large part of my education from 3rd grade on. I wound up getting a community college degree in Central Illinois, and I got a chemistry degree from the University of Illinois in Springfield. And I kind of tripped and fell into the world of scientific instrumentation. So I spent a lot of time.
Now that seems impossible, to trip and fall into the world of scientific instrumentation.
Well, it's kind of a funny story, because I actually started out working at a really large corn processor who will remain unnamed because they like to sue people. Okay. But I started out working out in a laboratory, and a couple, 10 days in, I started to get really sick. I was having trouble breathing. I was having like blisters on the back of my throat. And I call in, which I'm mortified. I'm a hard worker. I come from the show me state. We've got an incredible work ethic here in the Midwest. And The idea of calling in sick 10 days into a brand new job was embarrassing to me. So when I call into my supervisor, she says, "Hey, you know what? No big deal. Go to this doctor. They'll write you a prescription for this, this, and this. And you'll feel better once you get used to breathing the air that we breathe here."
So, that seems a little too specific of like, don't worry. I know what the doctor's going to give you.
Don't worry. We've seen it before. It's totally normal. Your lungs just have to adjust. So I thought, you know, maybe this isn't the best, you know, the right job for me. So yeah. I put my resume out there, and I wound up working for a company that specialized in whole, you know, analyzing whole grains like corn and soybeans and wheat. And so I traveled around teaching people how to use pretty uncomplicated scientific equipment that would tell them how much moisture or protein or fat was in their pet food or their cornmeal or different types of agricultural products. So I kind of joke that my life has been a giant episode of How It's Made. So,
well, that sounds like
I've seen pet food made. I've seen French fries. I've had an Oreo a couple of minutes after it's been sandwiched off of the line, hot and fresh.
Didn't is that have as glorious as it seems? Cause that seems glorious.
It is. In fact, I didn't have another Oreo for about 10 years after that, just because, you know, when are you going to have a better Oreo? The answer is never.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, that seems like really good. I mean, you know, running for Congress in the Missouri 3rd District, if you've traveled around doing that kind of stuff with those kinds of places, that would seem like a very useful skill, you know, going in different places, learning about different places, being able to help folks, you know, access basically information and services that they need to do what they need to do. That sounds a lot like what you're supposed to do anyway, what I understand you're supposed to do if you're a member of Congress.
Yeah, it's a lot of problem solving. It's listening. It's also a lot of learning from the people around you and coming up with common sense solutions that make sense to everybody after maybe listening to a lot of really complicated explanations or facts or opinions.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. That really is, you know, I'm a lawyer by trade, and I deal with a lot of family law stuff. And that oftentimes is what it comes down to, right, is taking a complex problem and finding the simplest solution. It seems like we just don't have a lot of that coming from Congress in general.
Oh no, I'm running against a representative who doesn't even think that he has to go out and campaign. He just needs to call up his PAC buddies and put checks in the bank and run his TV ads. He doesn't have to do much more than that.
How are you finding reception with folks in the third? So I'm from Warrenton originally. Okay.
Okay. My kid brother played roller hockey up. One of my brothers and sisters played roller hockey up there.
Yeah, everybody played roller hockey in Warrenton, right? Yeah, the dry ice arena. Yeah. I spent some stories I can tell you when we're not recording about that place. So the drove through Forestville a lot, had family out on P Highway over there, right? So I know the area very well. And now it stretches, of course, it's a little bit different district now, the way they've kind of redrawn it. But even so, same basic character, right, is there. So what kind of reception are you getting from folks? Because I know that Democrat in that area is not necessarily going to be the easiest road to hoe. But are you finding folks are wanting to talk and have conversations, or is it a lot of slam doors?
You know, it really kind of depends. I mean, I was out at a candidate forum out in Warrenton where they invited people who were running for office to speak. It was just primarily for House and Senate candidates. So I didn't want to go in and crash their party. Well, some Republicans who were running against Blaine Lukemeyer in the primary showed up and they got a chance to speak, but I didn't even get a chance to talk in the forum. John Caney was there, who's running for House District over there, and he was the one Democrat that was up in front. So with the exception of that one instance, everybody wants to talk.
Yeah.
And because so many people in the third district in particular feel that their representatives don't talk to them. It's kind of an anomaly, somebody coming out and asking them what they really think about different issues. And, you know, I have the things that I stand for, but when I'm knocking on doors and talking to people, I just ask, hey, what do you care about? What kind of things do you and your family struggle with? You know, in a perfect world, how could a government help you? And you would be surprised at how open people are to talking about just everyday things. Even if there are things that we don't agree on, we can talk about how much we like the St. Louis Blues or how the Cardinals are doing.
Yeah.
But universally, from what I'm hearing from voters, is they just feel left behind and not represented from anyone. So there's not this tremendous party loyalty per se. It's more of just wanting to feel heard.
I would imagine there's plenty of them who probably don't know who their representative is at this point. And I don't think that's uncommon necessarily for folks to not necessarily know who their member of Congress is, but for the reason of what you're talking about, which is this is not a person who is like a regular fixture in the community.
Yeah, generally when people ask who I'm running against and I tell them, they say either two things. They say who? Or they say, oh, Blaine.
All right.
There's not much in between. I've never heard an enthusiastic response to the congressman who's in the third district right now.
What are you getting on? You know, obviously, there's a lot of folks who want to talk about what should the Democrats' message be on abortion. I've gotten emails about that. You know, folks want to talk about how we have to harness Kansas and how we have to message on it. Are you finding that even when you're talking with folks who say, well, I'm a Republican, or they, you know, say, I don't know that I could vote for a Democrat, is that issue, is the Dobbs opinion, the overturning of Roe, is that hitting home with folks who are kind of, you know, maybe given a little bit more leeway on that issue than they might have before?
Yes. In fact, that's one of the kind of the tried and true things that you weren't supposed to talk about when you knock on doors, is don't talk about guns and don't talk about abortion.
Right.
And I'm finding that people really do want to talk about abortion. They want to talk about healthcare access. And what surprised me is, you know, I understand where the other side comes from as far as, you know, protecting the sanctity of life. I was raised in an evangelical household. In fact, my parents were actually pretty active in some more far right activities. My mom volunteered at a crisis pregnancy center, for example, a place where they give bad information to women.
Intentionally. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm familiar with where they come from. I'm familiar with the origins of that movement. And I also see just the regular people who really believe in protecting and building up the family. So I understand that. But what I'm finding, and it's kind of exciting to hear, that there's a little bit of a turning point that's coming, particularly in younger evangelical circles. I'm talking to young women now that I went to church with growing up, and one of them said to me, you know, I never thought that I would say this, but I actually think I'm a pro-choice, pro-lifer. And it's because they really do think that they went too far, especially in Missouri, where we have this trigger law and such a restrictive ban on any abortion, because many, well, I don't want to use definitive terms, but many people who have, you know, many people who access reproductive health care, they understand what certain things are. So right. they know that when you're going in and you're having a miscarriage, that you might have to have a medical abortion to save your life. You might even have to have a D&C if your bleeding doesn't stop. And when you start to talk about abortion as healthcare, then it becomes much more of, hey, this is way too much government overreach. We don't want the government to be that involved. In fact, you know, it should be me and my family's decision as to what kind of healthcare options we look for. It should be between us and our doctor. So I am seeing a tide turn quite a bit when we have these conversations about abortion and people want to have them.
That is an interesting thing that, you know, I didn't expect that when it first came down. But I also didn't know it that way. I've talked about this a little bit before, but, you know, I mean, I've got three kids. I'm a reasonably well-educated person, but I couldn't have told you in April 2022. Okay. I could not have told you what a DNC is, right?
Yeah.
Didn't know what it was. Had no idea. First time I heard somebody say it, I thought they were talking about the Democratic National Committee. You're right, or a convention. I totally didn't know what it was. Did some reading, got educated on it, and went, oh, I'm pro-abortion. And I did not know that. Like, mm-hmm. I definitely was somebody who would have said, you know, we need to temper what we say. We need to be careful about the way we talk about abortion. And we should talk about common sense pro-choice approaches and, you know, being open to limitations and open. And then I went, oh, I'm not at all. And now I understand why that argument has been made for so long. And is like, are you seeing that kind of light come on for people where it's like, do they understand that late term abortion is being used to describe something that doesn't happen, and that a late term abortion is truly almost exclusively, if not exclusively, a medical procedure, often a life-saving medical procedure?
Yes. I'm seeing that people are realizing this, and a lot of people are realizing this after they hear personal stories. And I think that personal stories are very effective in communicating what those things are. And that's why I had no trouble talking about how, you know, I recently announced that I'm pregnant. I'm 20 weeks long. And we waited. I actually found out I was pregnant the night before the Dobbs decision came out.
Wow.
Which was pretty heavy. I also, you know, ladies aren't supposed to say their age, but I turned 40 this year. So I am a high risk pregnancy in a state where we have the highest maternal mortality rates in the nation and also, you know, in developed world. So it's kind of a frightening thing. And my husband and I waited until we were sure that the genetic stuff came back okay before we even announced it, because a couple months before that, I had a really traumatic miscarriage.
Yeah.
And so it was one of those situations where I was in the hospital for 10 hours bleeding. We didn't know if it would stop. My husband was home with my infant and my stepdaughter, and it was terrifying. And at a certain point, the doctors came in and said, hey, if you don't stop bleeding, we're going to have to give you a medical abortion to help this stop, to save your life. And a couple hours later, man, it's getting scary. It's not even going to be helped with a medical abortion. We may have to go in and do a D&C. And I'm just thankful that I was able to have the healthcare access and that my doctor was willing to do what was necessary to save my life. But both of those things that would have been used to save my life would now get me a felony of 5 to 15 years in this state. And by sharing stories like that, people start to say, hey, you know what? Something like that happened to my sister. Or, you know what? I went through something similar. You know, I had a friend, you know, disclose to me a personal story about, you know, how she was farther along and she had to have a D&C after twins that she was carrying were not viable anymore, and just how heartbreaking and terrible that is. And when you start to talk about late term abortions, first of all, late term abortions, partial birth abortions, those things are just buzzwords that have been used by the religious right This is one of those moments where just edit it out for a minute. But those are both done. So those are just buzzwords used by the religious right to just further divide people and kind of inject some fear and panic into an issue that really is just an issue of healthcare and healthcare access. Yeah.
I really want to rebrand the religious right, because it makes it seem like the people that are coming up with this stuff are the religious people. And what we know is that it's really the rights, comma, that's using religion, right? They're sort of injecting it into, and you know, you're talking about you grew up in an evangelical house miles away from where I also grew up in an evangelical household. We went to Southern Baptist Church, right? You and I, I'm 37, you're 40. We probably had very, very similar, you know, could swap some very similar stories about different things. If you ever went to Quiver River Church Camp, maybe we saw each other there. But
High Hill Christian Assembly.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So my first Baptist church was Jonesburg. So,
oh, okay. Yeah.
So there you go. Little White Church. So, but those, most of those folks are going to, not from a simplistic standpoint, but from a belief standpoint, if something gets injected into the belief structure, it's going to be pretty easy to accept it and take it on and sort of heap it onto the belief structure. And then once they're tied together, right, once your sincerely held religious belief is tied with a political position, if you didn't do it, you know, yourself, that's really hard to undo. And I think we're sort of in that zone right now where people are starting to see the distinction between those two things, which is really tricky and really hard. But it does seem like if we aren't honest about what abortion is and just talking about pro-abortion as a medical procedure versus trying to come up with all these reasons to talk about being pro-choice,
right,
seems like that's a much harder conversation to have now than just saying I'm pro-abortion and here's why.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, I mean, we grew up in the same circle, so you probably know, and a lot of people don't realize that, you know, the pro-choice or the pro-life movement was really just founded not because there was some, you know, because of the love for the babies, although that's used to emotionally manipulate religious people into.
And not even just religious people, right? Lots of people get manipulated by that language.
Well, who doesn't love kids? Who doesn't love their grandkids and want to build a prosperous family, of course? It really comes from the anti-labor movement, if we're being frank about it. And they tried in the 70s and the 80s to find different topics that they could successfully use to divide the American workforce. Abortion was the most successful, but they also tried anti-LGBTQ legislation or ideas there. You see that being rebranded, particularly with the anti-trans movement that you see coming out of some of those same circles. They also tried anti-pornography campaigns, and nothing really stuck emotionally the way that Saving the Babies does. And so if we can just talk more frankly about how that being more of a political movement versus actual healthcare that, you know, healthcare needs, you know, because that's the idea, right?
Right.
Is you have the rights movement that wants to deny American workers rights. They want to deny American workers healthcare, fair wages, good benefits. They want, you know, profit over people always, and that's their business model. And if we think about, hey, it's actually their business model to deny you healthcare and to deny you fair wages and time off after you have children, then it makes a little more sense. But I mean, abortion is frankly just healthcare. And the more that we talk about it in those terms, just the more successful our messaging is. And it's important to have a strong, clear message about this issue because it impacts so many people. I mean, something like 90% of people who can bear children have a pregnancy throughout the course of their life. And that's a significant number of people who need healthcare, whether you choose to have a pregnancy or you have complications or, you know, all sorts of different scenarios. And so one of the more effective ways to talk about that is to just use your, you know, personal stories. Unfortunately, that means that those of us who have those stories have to share our trauma or, you know, share our bad experiences to get the word out. But doing so helps save lives. And that's what that's about. Because if abortion is healthcare and access to healthcare saves lives, then abortion actually saves lives. And we should be doing whatever we can to make sure that everyone has access to that.
I like, you know, the through line that you had there. And if folks, if you didn't catch that, you know, if you want to know why is Bethany somebody that you should be getting behind to go to Congress, you took that from, you know, my political question about abortion over into healthcare and basically love thy neighbor and then brought it all the way back to the political issue. And I applaud you for that. That's very nice.
Hey folks, Adam Sommer here. Just wanted to remind you, you can get signed up for our Patreon. You can get links to all of our shows, information about our hosts and what we do over at heartlandpod.com. Sign up for our Patreon. You get extra episodes, extra access. You can also follow us on all the social medias, Facebook, Instagram, and of course on Twitter. We love to interact over there with @TheHeartlandPod on Twitter. Just search for us and find the three leaves. Any place you find podcasts or social media, we'll be there. Give us a rating if you can. 5 stars, really appreciate it. And now let's get back to the show.
Speaking of a political issue that is unfortunately political, education is under an incredible strain right now.
Yes.
Are you in the third district? Are y'all having the issues with the library attacks? I mean, I don't know a better way to put it other than library attack.
Yeah, it's a coordinated attack by actually some hate groups. You see the Proud Boys involved in this. You see them showing up at libraries, calling for libraries that show any kind of LGBTQ flags or books or any librarians who are talking about inclusion or diversity. They're showing up to demand that librarians get fired, and it's disgusting. It's organized hate. It's not just happening here. It's happening in other states, but we've seen it down in Owensville, and we've seen it, I'm just recently down in Camden 10 over in Osage, and it's really upsetting and troubling. Because personally, I'm a book nerd. I love books. I love libraries. I think librarians are awesome. Libraries are wonderful centers in a community, so that where you can get internet access if you don't have it at home. You can do job searches. You can learn something new. You can take your kids there for crafts and other activities. And it's disgusting when bullies come up and try to push people around, particularly librarians. I mean, who does that?
I know, it's crazy. It's so hard to wrap my brain around, like, people looking at a librarian and wanting to attack a librarian. Like, it's so maddening. And yet here we are, and it's school librarians and county librarians and city. It's across the board, and it's completely ignoring actual education needs that we have in the state of Missouri. They're just getting thrown out the window in the process.
Well, it's not a mystery where it comes from. I mean, they are associated with white supremacist hate groups, and these groups they want to burn books. I mean, that's what the Nazis did in Germany. They got rid of the books they didn't like that preached any message that they didn't want to be preached. And in our society right now, you've got also attacks on education, which kind of come from the same vein, and it kind of goes back to that anti-labor movement where you want to take something that's a public good, that's really good, and you want to do your best to privatize it, when really all you're doing is funneling money into the pockets of the very wealthy. And then, you know, you want to control your messaging so that you can hold and maintain that control. That's all that's happening here.
Yeah. So infrastructure, to completely shift gears.
Yeah.
In the third district, lots of rural areas, lots of good old fashioned back roads. Although I heard recently one of my favorite back roads in the world got paved, Lost Creek Road in Warren County. That sort of blows my mind. But there's so many roadways in that district that sort of wind around, and these, you got the bottom roads, you got all kinds of really important roadways as well. Are you seeing that the current option, right? Blaine, who's been representing the third for some time, has the third been getting what it ought to be getting in terms of infrastructure?
No, absolutely not. And in fact, that's the kind of the sad thing is there have been billions of dollars invested in infrastructure, and there's no reason that we shouldn't have our fair share of that money allocated to rural parts of the state, not just in bigger cities. And that's what Blaine's done, is he's just really neglected the needs of his constituents in a lot of different ways, infrastructure being one of them. You know, the American Society of Civil Engineers, they give Missouri a C- for our infrastructure. Certain parts of our infrastructure that affect farmers, like dams, those get a D minus. Our roads are crumbling. Although when you see these freshly paved roads, that actually comes back from the Build Back Better plan.
Right.
So we should all thank Joe Biden for that.
Right. Right.
Rural infrastructure gets neglected, extremely. If you, you know, I drive, you know, I have a huge district, so I'm always on those roads. The average Missourian spends over $750 extra on car repairs just because the roads are so bad in this state. And it's not just roads. It's also our water infrastructure. Our water infrastructure is crumbling. We have outdated pipes that need to be changed that deliver water that has lead in it into our households, especially rural households or communities that don't have as many financial resources.
Yeah.
We have an issue with water contamination right now. One of the biggest issues that's not being talked about right now, but it's a national issue, is the contamination of our waterways with PFOS or PFOA Gen X chemicals, which are a man-made chemical made by a very large chemical company that's in Teflon-coated pans and firefighting foam that's used in military bases. So water contamination of military bases is particularly bad. These are chemicals that are in our drinking water now that they cause harm in your body in parts per quadrillion, and they're testing them.
So that doesn't take very much, is what you're saying?
No, it's teeny tiny
for
amount.
For those of us who do not speak chemist, that's a tiny amount.
Tiny amount, sorry. So they thought there was a teeny tiny amount, and then some data came to the EPA that shows that there's a whole lot of it, and it's a lot worse than we thought. And this stuff causes liver damage, it causes increased rates of cancer, and it's in our water right now. It's in everybody's blood right now because it's in our environment, but we don't talk about it because that would upset a big corporation.
Right.
But if you go and you watch the
kind of like abortion.
Yeah, right. But if you go and you watch the movie Dark Waters with Mark Ruffalo, I'm not getting paid for this endorsement at all. It's a legal procedural movie where a corporate attorney gets a call from his grandma who says, "Hey, I told my friend that you're a lawyer and maybe you can look up this case." And it turns out a local farmer in West Virginia was having some issues with their cattle. And their cattle were getting really sick. And so they thought it was linked to the chemical that was being dumped in their waterway by a big company. And newsflash, yes, it was. And it's in all of our water and it's worse than we think. Mm. So infrastructure is not just bridges and roads, it's water quality. It's anywhere we're transporting things, it's rail. And we have infrastructure that's crumbling and it's costing us jobs. It's not just it's the right thing to do to clean up water because we should drink clean water. It's, hey, this is costing us money. Bad water costs manufacturers millions and millions of dollars and things at first.
Buying filters and buying bottled water and like all of the thing, you know, it's funny because you hear the same folks who I feel like would look at you like you've got, I don't know, antenna grown out of your eyeballs if you wanted to talk to them, stand and talk to them about parts per quadrillion for too long, are also the same folks who say, well, when I was a kid, we just drank out of the hose in the front of the house. It's like, yeah, well, when you were a kid, these chemicals weren't being dumped in the water yet. And it was a lot different than it is now. And now the water's a lot worse than it was. And so it is different.
Back then it was just pesticides. Right. Now it's pesticides plus more.
Right. Yeah, I was fine when it was just pesticides. Well, it seems reason to send a chemist to Congress. I mean, that seems just smart to me.
Well, let's be real. People make more money off of building a cancer center. They can profit off of that rather than fixing the issue that's actually causing the problem. Right. And that's really a lot of what's going on here is it's corporate greed. You know, it's pretty disgusting. And American workers get hit the hardest. And here in rural Missouri, we get hit the hardest by that. And nobody speaks up about our interests or what affects our families here at home. Our representative doesn't show his face in the district. He doesn't spend much time here at all.
So what would be the one issue, you know, let's fast forward to November 9th and you have won the election, you're going to Congress, you get sworn in January. what's the issue that you want to make sure, hey, I know I've got 2 years. That's all I know I have. Maybe I never get to come back here again. What's the thing that you are going to grind on to make sure it gets dealt with?
Well, I think the one thing that helps all the things that I talk about in my platform, whether it be education, infrastructure, or healthcare, I think the one thing that we can do to support progress in all of those ways is to pass the PRO Act and make sure that we are supporting and protecting the American worker. Unions help build this country. One of the things that we're dealing with right now is just an overflow of corporate greed. And that leads to issues that we see in education. Corporate greed is why we see CRT campaigns in our schools. We see schools defunded because corporations want more money funneled into private coffers. With infrastructure, the same thing. Good union workers will rebuild our crumbling infrastructure. And then with healthcare, you see the same thing. If we were to do something like remove the ties that a person's employer has to their healthcare by passing Medicare for all, then we've strengthened the American worker and we've busted up some of that power that large corporations have against our working class.
Yeah, yeah.
So, supporting and strengthening American labor definitely is what can help us make and maintain progress throughout all of those things. And it also helps with abortion and healthcare rights as well, too. So to make sure that every worker has the right to collectively bargain is incredibly important. Yeah. I think that we need a renaissance in American labor right now, more than anything.
And you have, I mean, you've carried that throughout what your answers, and I appreciate that because it is, I'm going to say this person's name and talk about their book every chance I get. Nancy McLean, who wrote a book called Democracy in Chains. And essentially makes the case to follow the movement from 1955 to modern day, which became eventually the Koch brothers and what everybody knows as ALEC, and that it truly was. It had more to do with anti-collective action as a whole, whether that's labor or any place else, that the more time that the folks with the most money and power can keep the folks without money and power from all getting together and figuring out that they have a lot of power together, that they're going to do whatever they can to keep that from happening. And as a result, we find places suffering that just don't have somebody to stand up for them because it's not worth any money to stand up for them.
Yeah. And we also need to be forward thinking about this too. And this is something that I heard when I was at a local organization for some Amazon workers out in St. Charles. I don't know if you heard about this, but a bunch of Amazon workers out in St. Charles handed a letter to their management demanding a $10 an hour increase in pay. They had these different list of demands. And basically, you know, as you look towards companies like Amazon, they're monitoring their employees using artificial intelligence. And that's kind of the wave of the future in watching employee performance. And, you know, you have big corporations who are using even bigger tactics to scare and intimidate workers and make you further reliant on them for all of your needs.
Yeah.
You know, I heard stories about how if you get hurt on the job at Amazon, they have a doctor that they send you to, but that doctor doesn't take your insurance. So if you go there to complain about an injury, you're treated really poorly. They kind of deny your symptoms in the first place, and then you get stuck with a $400 or $500 bill because your insurance doesn't cover it. And that's just those are just simple thug intimidation tactics done by a big corporation. They're not, you know, they have supervisors, but they're watching you using artificial intelligence, and that's how things are going to start being manufactured in the industry. When you sit in their shareholder meetings, they talk about the Internet of Things and Industry 4.0, and that's an increased automation of manufacturing. And we really need to think about what that means for the American worker and how that's going to continue to negatively impact our communities.
Yeah. Yeah. This sort of romanticized idea of American ingenuity and manufacturing having this renaissance that's going to recreate, you know, what it was. No, it's really not going to happen. And even the factories that are going to onshore, most of them are going to do so as automated as possible. And in fact, a lot of them are going to build brand new factories. And I'm going to guess they're going to put as much technology in those brand new, beautiful factories with all of their TIF money that they get. They're going to technologically wizard those things.
And if they can automate out some jobs and pay workers less, that's what they're going to do. And that's what we're watching, is we're watching corporations make millions and billions of dollars off of the back of the American worker. And it's wrong. And frankly, their worst nightmare is that that people of color and the feminists and the LGBTQ community and the pro-life, pro-choicers all get together and figure out, hey, we're all being scammed. We're all being duped. And when we all come together, there are more of us than there are of them. And I believe in the strength of the American worker. And I think that there's nothing we can't do when we stand together and we fight strongly for some of these issues, because Missouri kids, they deserve the best education. They deserve an education that prepares them for good jobs of the future. We should have reliable, dependable ways of getting goods and services to people. And that means we should have good infrastructure. And we all deserve quality, affordable healthcare. It's not something that you should earn. It shouldn't be something that you have just because you have a nice job. It should be something that's afforded to you because you're a citizen of America, because you live in Missouri. And what happens in America, the things that happen with our business markets, it expands throughout the entire world. What we do in the US filters out, and you see effects of that in economies across the world 5, 10, 20 years later. So why are our workers getting the shaft? It's not right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, I get worked up about that.
No, that's all right. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I mean, they put us all into buckets, and it's hard to see when you're in your own bucket. It's hard to see that there's a ton of other people all in their own bucket, and you're all hanging, dangling from, you know, like if we can crawl out and look over the top of our bucket, look over the edge, so to speak, we'll notice that there's a ton of people all situated the same. And the things that are being used to separate are mostly superficial that really don't impact your day-to-day life.
And likewise on the, you know, in the same breath, all the things that are being used to divide us, we can actually come together and lead. Right. We can improve education in the world. We can improve the quality of healthcare worldwide. We can improve the ways that workers are treated in factories in Bangladesh. We can do that by setting a good example here. And that's what I was raised on. You know, you set a good example, you lead with character and integrity, and by the quality of your example, people will follow. And I think that we should all take it upon ourselves to lead in these issues.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Bethany Mann, with two N's, how can folks find you? I know we've got BethanyMannForCongress.com. How can they find you other than that to get a hold of you and help out?
Sure. Find me, BethanyMannForCongress.com. You can find me on Twitter at Mann, M-A-N-N, for the number 4, Congress. I'm also on Facebook under Bethany Mann for Congress. I have a Facebook and a group page there too. My Act Blue is right on my page, BethanyMannForCongress.com. And please consider donating something if I've said something that's inspired you. A lot of funding for this election cycle is going towards a very hotly contested Senate race here in Missouri, and also House district races right now too. We want to try to bust the supermajority and win 6 seats out in the House. That would help things a lot at the state level. Unfortunately, that's leaving us congressional candidates with a tough go at it with some fundraising. So every little bit helps. It helps us with literature, flyers, making sure our staff is paid.
Absolutely.
And all of those things. So every little bit helps with events that we're doing in rural parts of the state too. So I can't underline the support that we appreciate from all of you. So even if you can't give, like and share our page, share a thought or something that you enjoyed with your network, or just reach out.
Yeah. Get out there, get signed up, go knock some doors. It's a beautiful district. So go check it out. Bethany Mann for Congress, thank you very much for joining me, and best of luck out there.
Yeah, thank you so much, Adam.
The Heartland Pod is a production of Midmap Media, LLC. Follow us on Twitter with @TheHeartlandPod. With email, you can reach us, heartlandpod2020@gmail.com. Online with heartlandpod.com. Subscribe, and please sign up for our Patreon with patreon.com/heartlandpod. Become a podhead or an official Podgressive today and unlock all of our content. See you at the next show.